Coming to you from Los Angeles, California, this is Cheat Day Podcast. This is your host, Frankie, gender pronouns, he, him, his. And sitting across from me, my girl,
Kristen in the house, gender pronouns, she, her, hers.
Hey, everybody.
Hi, welcome.
Welcome.
Hi.
Renee Beaver is here, our first guest ever on Cheat Day Podcast. We are so excited to have her.
Yes.
Yay. And I jotted down a couple of things about Renee. Mm-hmm. First of all, we love her show.
Yeah.
She's fabulous. But she is a abstract artist. She's a creator, a model. She's extremely smart, bold, fearless, strong, giving. She's an activist. She's beautiful. She's black. She's a queer woman and she loves dogs. Yes.
Okay.
Just a few things about Renee.
Just a few little things. Just a few things.
Wow.
And we're so happy to have her here today. Couple of the things we want to talk about, podcasts. Mm-hmm. Renee's actually starting up a podcast. Mm-hmm. We want you to tell us a little bit more about that.
It's Attack of the Queer Wolf.
Attack of the Queer Wolf. So I definitely, I feel like saying I am starting it up is not entirely true. Mm-hmm. I co-host it with two other folks. Mm-hmm. I feel like I know the least out of the three of us, or rather about podcasts or like any of the technical stuff. So I'm glad that I have a lot of help with that. So I'm thankful for like Blumhouse and their connections and, you know, their studios and whatnot that can help out with those things. But yeah, we just started recording. Hopefully after we do a few more episodes, then we'll get like a press release going and we'll be good to go.
So what is kind of like the format? Like, is it you just talk about horror films in general, or you take it like specific film at a time?
So right now we have this like large list of horror films that we feel like are very queer, or who have like they have a queer aspect, queer characters, or something along those lines. And then each week we discuss one film.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really awesome. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite horror film? If you could pick one.
You know, I don't know if I can pick one, but there are like certain themes that I really enjoy in a horror movie. So I really like a hospital setting for a horror movie, because hospitals are fucking scary.
Yes.
Oh, are we allowed to curse?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, totally.
Okay. Hospitals are fucking scary. I love, I really love like a trashy family theme, like Rob Zombie, because that's fucking scary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. children are super scary when they're in horror movies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it just varies. I usually really appreciate like something that is more of like a psychological thriller versus like just violent or gory. But I do love like a slasher film as well.
Right.
So
Okay. Yeah.
That's
awesome. I think I like more, because when it's something like paranormal stuff, like if I can't see it, it kind of doesn't, so to me, like a psychological or like something that is creepy that you can actually see, or like a killer, it's more of a scary thing because it fucks with me. Especially if I'm watching it at home and I'm alone and it's nighttime, it's like I'm pretty convinced that I'm going to die.
Yeah, for me, like a movie where it's like a home invasion, that is terrifying.
Yeah.
Like I can't even barely deal.
Yeah.
But if someone's like possessed, as someone who doesn't believe in ghosts or or like God even, I am like less scared because I just I don't personally believe it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I hear that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I hear that.
I'm the same way. Like if I don't think it can happen in real life, it's like, okay, this is cute and all. Yeah, but I freak out with horror movies. Like, Andy will often be watching something, and I'm like, he watched It the other night.
Yes.
And I couldn't watch the full-on movie, but I kept walking into the room and standing in the doorway, like, kind of watching.
Yeah.
And then it would freak me out, and then I would leave the room. But, yeah, I can get into a scary movie.
Hell yeah.
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 So I think when we're, you know, talking about the things that you've been doing and Kristen just listed a bunch of things. So you're an artist, yes. right? So maybe you can talk yes. a little bit about.
I am an artist. I am an abstract artist. I paint. Mm-hmm. I do some photography, but right now in my life is mostly painting. And that's only, I've been painting for many years, but I only started calling myself an artist a couple years ago.
Okay.
And I think, unfortunately, it was just tied to capitalism. I was like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm selling art. I'm an artist, which is, that's fucked up. Like, you don't have to sell art to be an artist.
Correct.
But it did, like, make that legitimate for me in a certain way because, you know, I do live in this capitalistic society. Mm-hmm. So making money, having someone, like, pay for, like, my imagination, it's like, it's still, like, obviously very flattering and, like, it's touching to me because mm-hmm. I think I spent a long time thinking I wasn't an artist also because I did abstract art. I was like, oh, you know, if you tell me to draw this person, I can't. It's not going to look like that person. And I thought that meant right. I wasn't an artist.
Right.
But I was always doing these other very creative things and I loved doing it. And I made a lot of art just out of being uncomfortable and not feeling well, being mm-hmm. anxious, being upset. And it just could soothe something in me that I couldn't quite touch in any other way. Mm-hmm. And so it was something I was doing anyway. And then at some point I started selling that work and I wish that wasn't the thing that made me be like, I'm an artist, but it was. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, here I am mm-hmm. doing that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Where, you know, you have a website, so maybe you want to mention that.
So I'm working on my website right now, okay. but I do have an Instagram for my art, and mm-hmm. that is, the handle's Gaudy Los Angeles. It's Gaudy Los Angeles. I feel like my work is very gaudy, and mm-hmm. I feel like I am very gaudy. I just love the idea of being just like large and shiny and like just like the thing your eyes go to in a room. And yeah. I like to feel positively about that as an adult because I haven't always felt, wow. you know, good about that. And yeah. so I feel like my art is very much like that. And yeah, I already forgot what you asked me. But oh, yeah. Gaudy Los Angeles. Yes. On Instagram.
Yeah. And but something that you mentioned that was interesting because – speaking that you haven't always felt like you wanted to be the mm-hmm. the big shiny that everybody yeah. looks at in the room, because we've spoken a lot about like growing up and mm-hmm. We are in different Kristen and I are in different spaces when it comes to embracing oneself, and I feel like you've further than I am. I mean, clearly everybody still struggles and they have difficult days, but I feel like I'm just sort of starting this journey of embracing myself and my body and where wow. I'm at.
Great.
But then, you know, I have very difficult days.
Yeah,
but,
of course.
And we talk about childhood mm-hmm. and what are like influences or things that might have influenced that or how you feel about how you view yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of how was yours, like you growing up? And
you know, well, I've always been fat. Mm-hmm. Well, almost always. I was born 2 months early and was like 4 pounds.
Okay.
And then, which everyone thought was really hilarious when I was a fat kid. Mm-hmm. And so I think my mom said, I mean, because, you know, like, for me, I was going to blanket the experience. But for me, moms are, like, just the most fat phobic people ever. And even if they're yeah. fat, and they just, like, I feel like my mom's been telling my whole life the point in which I got fat. And I think mm-hmm. I was, like, 4, 2, 3, I don't know. But mm-hmm. young, before I started school. And so in kindergarten, I was 5 feet tall and 100 pounds,
mm.
so it's just huge, you know. Mm-hmm. And 5 feet tall and 100 pounds, I, according to those silly, you know, BMI charts, I think that that's actually, like, not overweight. But right. for a five-year-old, you're just, like, a huge five-year-old. So I've always been much taller than the people my age. Yeah. I'm still a tall person, and I've always, always been fatter. And I think that in addition to that, I grew up in an environment that was super white. Super Christian, super rural, you know, like evangelical, very, it's very hateful in a lot of ways. And so I think there's just a lot of ways that I stood out. Mm-hmm. I was usually the only person of color. Mm-hmm. I definitely was a queer looking child, even though I didn't know it at the time. I would be like, why is this person calling me a boy? I don't look like a boy. And now I look at pictures and I'm like, you look like a really cute boy. Like, that's what was happening. And so I hated it. I just wanted so badly to just fucking disappear. Like, leave me the fuck alone.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to always be this person that's very different. I just felt so weird and strange and dorky. And I was super clumsy because, you know, I'm, like, tall and my feet are, like, size 11. And I'm, like, 9 years old and I'm tripping over my shit all the time. And I just hated that so much. I spent so much time hiding away by myself to, like, read a book or play with something because I was just like, everyone, just leave me alone. You're all so annoying.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of my memories are, like, being on a staircase somewhere or, like, under a tree and just trying to get some space because I believed the things that they were telling me. You know, I'm like, yeah, I'm fat. And if I wasn't fat, like, I would be pretty. And yeah, I'm fat. And if I wasn't fat, then, like, somehow I would be smarter or, like, whatever the case may be. And so I just spent many, many years hating myself. And I don't know if it's, like, a Midwestern thing or, like, a Midwestern woman thing, but I feel like I was raised by women, my mom and her sisters and her mom, and I feel like they all hated themselves. Most of my family's fat. They definitely hated that about themselves. All the church women, a lot of them were fat. Everyone just hated their fatness, hated their bodies. Even the women who weren't fat thought they were fat. Everyone was scared to be fat if they weren't fat. Or, like, I feel like I spent so much of my life being like, okay, 6 months from now, I'm going to be going to Florida. And I would just really love to be, like, thin by then or, like, thinner. And, like, oh, my God, I would just be so happy if I could, like, graduate from eighth grade and be a size 16 or, like, whatever the goal was. And I just spent my whole life looking forward to something that I thought was just not going to happen because I wasn't good enough. And, like, I didn't have enough discipline. And I never, I just always, and I internalized all of that basically. And so I remember working at Sunglass Hut in, like, 2005, 2006 when I was an undergrad. And so I'm, like, 20, 21. And there were mirrors everywhere, all over the store. And I literally, like, had it timed to where I could, like, walk through the store and know when to turn my head so that I wouldn't see myself in a mirror.
Oh, my God.
And I realized that, like, I had just never spent a lot of time even looking at my whole body. Here I am, like, in at the time in my early 20s. And I was like, have you ever even, like, spent time looking in a full-length mirror? And no, because I didn't want to. It was, like, super painful. I thought I was ugly, disgusting. All I did was see things that I didn't want to be there. And all of those things were always, all those ideas were always supported by, of course, hateful strangers, but also my loved ones. Yep. Like, my whole family, like, all of us were like, okay, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. What if all of us lost weight? What if all of us, you know? And my whole life just revolved around, like, what I was eating and either feeling good or bad about that. And then, like, hating my body.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, well, I think what one thing that helped, and I don't want folks to seek this out to, like, affirm themselves, but when I got to college and I wasn't around just, like, one kind of people, I found people being attracted to me, like, sexually attracted to me. And it weirded me out because I had always not, I certainly didn't feel like I wasn't attracted to anyone, but I just didn't feel worthy of anyone's attention, and their attention in that way made me really uncomfortable. And I think that's a combination of, like, being a sexual assault survivor, but also being someone who lived in a body that I felt was just disgusting and that I would never want anyone to touch it or, like, see me naked or, like, anything like that. And so in college, when people started being attracted to me, I was like, oh, like, that's a new thing for me to feel like the cute girl, like, over here. Like, oh, someone thinks I'm cute. Like, oh, my God, like, what's happening? And but I found myself where I couldn't even engage with someone in that way because I hated myself so much. Like, I was just so uncomfortable in my body. And so I remember reading this book, and I should have looked it up before I came here. But reading something along the lines of, like, we talk to ourselves way worse than we would ever talk to another loved one. Hopefully, probably, you know, not always, but, like, for the most part. And that just, like, blew my mind that I had spent a couple decades being like, you aren't shit, you're ugly, you're fat, you aren't worth anything, no one's ever gonna love you. And I was like, what if, even though I believe those things right now, what if I just, like, tried to catch myself in those moments and at least was just like, don't say that to yourself. Mm-hmm. Even if I still think it's true, even if I still like, even if those thoughts are still popping up for me, what if I just like was just like a little nicer to myself since I have to like live in this body? And it was really started working. I would start like talking to my family, like, you know what, why are we so mean to ourselves? And it didn't really catch on with many people. But for me, that was like a really life-changing moment where I was just like, in those moments when I am cognizant of what I'm saying to myself, mm-hmm. I'm really going to pay attention to that. And that doesn't mean that I'm never like, you're fucking stupid or like, why'd you do that? It just means that I'm like, if I'm saying that I love myself, it has to be not only in word, it has to be in deed also. Like, I have to really think about how I treat people that I love and if like how I treat myself. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I spent years just there mm-hmm. being like, okay, like there's this combination of like being around people who aren't the worst and who are like affirming me. And then there's also like this internal thing where I'm like, okay, well, you're actually like kind of funny. You're smart. Like, you have a lot of people love you. You have a lot of friends. You make friends easily. Like, what if you are not garbage? Like, what if, like, and you know what else really helped me is having other fat friends.
Yeah.
I think when I was young, like, I was certainly the fattest, but I don't even remember anyone even being close to how fat I was. Mm-hmm. And when I got older, I had fat friends and I would think about them and I would think about how I loved them. And so in moments where I literally would feel like I didn't deserve a friend because I was fat, I would think of my fat friend that I loved. And I'd be like, oh, I actually never think of that person as like a caricature of like who they are. I never think of that person as like stupid or gross. And I was like, huh. And I would just like channel that in those moments when I would be like, ugh, what if my friends are just like, God, she's so fat, you know? And I sat there for years and like that was enough for me. And I still was someone who in the back of my mind was like, well, what if I did lose weight? You know, what if I did like change how I looked? Like maybe all these things would change for me. And I think it's okay to exist like wherever you are mm-hmm. in your journey. I mean, because if it's not okay, fuck, like we're all like, it just has to be okay,
right.
You know?
Right.
And so I'm kind of lost at where.
No,
so
I mean,
I just talked for so long.
But and just like everything was so amazing.
I relate
absolutely.
So much.
Absolutely.
You know, it's nice to hear another fellow human being.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I think this is what's coming up for me right now. I'm thinking about when I truly started feeling as good as I feel now about myself, which obviously takes maintenance. It can be like knocked down at any given moment by like something fucked up that comes up for me that I didn't address yet, that I didn't remember, like whatever the case may be. But honestly, like living here in Los Angeles for almost 8 years, I have been really lucky to have this kind of like queer family here in LA. And I think no one has affirmed me and loved me as completely and authentically as like queer folks here in Los Angeles. And at this point, like everywhere, because, you know, we all move and whatnot. And mm-hmm. but here in LA, when I made that family, that like chosen family, that really changed my life. Mm-hmm. Like I had people who were gassing me up all day, every day, like, yes, mamas, you look cute. Yes, girl. And it was just amazing to me that I could be exactly who I was and that there was this group of people saying that that was okay. Mm-hmm. And not only that it was okay, but that it was bomb, like that it was amazing. And, you know, a few years of that, and I just really felt like, I mean, I don't know if it's like one of my manic grandiose moments, but I felt unstoppable. Like when you have that kind of support, because that also, I feel like it was the first time in my life that I felt like I could trust my loved ones. And so in moments where I'm like, I'm gross or I'm crazy or whatever the case may be, I'm like, you know what? My loved ones tell me that I'm brilliant. My loved ones tell me that whatever the case may be. And I'll be like, I would believe them about anything else. So I guess I'm going to believe them about this. And as I got older within that community, opportunities came up for me to show my art. And I feel like a lot of the showcases I've been in have been with other fat artists. Mm-hmm. And so I just got really lucky and have had been able to actually have like a lot of fat friends. And that's just like amazing. Like fat solidarity forever. Yeah. Like I just
dance
like,
straight.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's just so good to be, I mean, even to be in this room with y'all right now, like talking about these things is just so amazing. Mm. And I think if I had been like 13 back in that cornfield in Illinois, when I was like annoyed with everybody and feeling like shit, they'd have been like, you know what? In like 20 years, you're going to be in Los Angeles, you're sitting in a room with people that you fucking love. You're going to be talking about these things. I'll be like, no, like in 20 years, I better be skinny. Right. Like that better be what's true. Like, in 20 years, I need to be skinny so I can be married to a good Christian man and have my children and like whatever. And I just feel so blessed, for lack of that word can be a little annoying sometimes, but I feel it right now. I feel so blessed. And so I don't know.
No, thank you. I mean, I think I'll speak for myself. I feel really lucky because people don't know the history, but we used to work in the same place. But you and I never really interacted. So this is like kind of like our first time actually meeting and talking. And I just feel really lucky to be able to have this conversation with you and that you have agreed to come and chat with us for a little bit. Yeah, it's really amazing.
Absolutely. And you and I did interact. We also worked in the same place and we did get a chance to interact a lot more. We shared an office. Mm-hmm. We worked together. Mm-hmm. And I never saw you as fat. I just always saw you as like a fabulous woman who knew how to thrift, who knew how to find just like bomb ass pieces and like the leggings, leggings.
Oh my God, my leggings era.
She seriously had like 20 pairs of different leggings.
Oh, yeah.
Neon. Like
a swap meet queen.
Yeah, I remember that. But yeah, fat solidarity. It's nice when you see somebody that, you know, doesn't necessarily look exactly like you, but like you know that they feel you.
Yeah, it's just so validating. And I mean, fuck normal, but normalizing. And, you know, it's just a good feeling.
Visibility.
Yeah. Visibility. Yeah, I mean, I definitely, you know, sometimes visibility feels like a trap. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, but also the work that gets done in it, it does have value, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. I love it. So you had an Instagram post talking about you quit your full-time gig 2 months ago.
Yes.
You said that you kind of had some things happen this year that just kind of caused you to go for it.
Yeah.
So I would love to hear more about that. Yeah. Like what changed?
So one of the main things I think that changed for me was truly a medication regimen that worked for me. Like I am bipolar, mm-hmm. PTSD, I'm an anxious little bitch all the time. And what I didn't realize as a younger person on my mental health journey was that if you have a mood disorder and you're only taking an antidepressant, it's not always enough. And please, anyone listening to this, like talk to your doctor. So from my personal experience, I needed more than that. It was causing my moods to cycle just in a way that was not cute, real not cute. And so I truly feel like I have been, up until the past year or so, just sad my whole life. Like I always thought of myself as just a little bit of lingering sadness somewhere. Like I have sad girl tattooed like inside my lip. Mm. Like just think of myself as a sad, like just kind of like somewhere in it, just like a little sad. And I had made my peace with that. I was like, okay, it's trendy right now to be sad girl. Like look at me, I've been sad. Okay, you know. And I thought that I thought life was just a string of hard events, and eventually you fucking die. Like I was just like, okay, because my moods were just like, I would be on highs, you know, when something good would happen, or for any other reason, but especially when something good. Mm-hmm. And then I would get knocked off of that and down to the depths. And I was like, fuck, is life just like one cliff to a valley to another to a valley? And I was really exhausted by that idea. Yeah. And I was like, well, so that means my shit will never be together. That means that I will always be kind of sad, which is just further depressing. I felt like I would always be scared of trying new things and not have the capacity or like energy to try new things or learn new things. And eventually I finally got like the diagnosis that was beyond like, you're just anxious. And that was like, oh, actually maybe there's like a mood thing going on. Mm. And I was a little hesitant to like live in that diagnosis because I think I just knew like 45 black women that had been told they were bipolar on their first visit to a psychiatrist. And I was just like, okay, so maybe like I need some time to live with this idea that this could be a possibility for me to really know if like that's where I fit mm-hmm. and like what I need to do. So eventually I had started at like a different psychiatrist and there was just this approach that I hadn't ever considered. And they're like, oh, you know, like sometimes folks who have a mood disorder, like they add like another antidepressant or like a mood stabilizer and it just like helps them even out. And I was like, okay, I'm down to try. Super scared to try. Like, new medications are fucking terrifying to me. Like, I was already an anxious person, and I really just thought that, like, swallowing a pill could kill me. Like, oh my God. So it took me a long time to try it, and then I tried one, and it was horrible. Mm. I was, like, dizzy. I couldn't go to work for a week. Like, I wanted to kill myself. Like, you know, and I was like, fuck, I cannot try another one of these. Like, I don't have another week to take off work. Like, I'm never going to be okay. Like, this is how people end up, like, alienating all their loved ones and, like, living outside. And, you know, I was just, like, spiraling.
Yeah.
And so a few months went by, and I actually was at the gynecologist, and she was talking about some patients of hers that had really good results, like, you know, just like switching some medication up and whatnot. And she mentioned like Wellbutrin, and that's like one of the meds I take. And she really just made me feel really, really fucking good about trying it. And so I, you know, took the leap one day and was like, okay, I'm going to try this new medication. And it worked like almost immediately, whether it was placebo or not, I don't really care. Like, I was feeling good and feeling good in a way I had never felt before almost immediately, like within a week. And that changed a lot for me. All of a sudden, I like didn't think life was just a string of hard events. I was like, oh, hard things can happen, but I'm not plunging to the depths in which I plunged previously. So like, I don't think I need to kill myself this time. Or like, I'm having like positive thoughts and I'm feeling like confident and I know that I'm not being manic right now. Or like, I'm mostly sure I'm not being manic right now. And that did a lot for my confidence. And it did a lot for like dreaming about possibilities. Like, you could not have told me 2 years ago that I would be a full-time artist. I'll be like, fuck no. Like, I feel like shit. I'm like having panic attacks when I wake up every morning. Mm. You know, you just couldn't have told me that. I would have been like, no, that I'm going to keep working. Sorry, I have like a hiccup or something. That's okay. Like not. You could not have told. I would like, no, I'm going to keep working this job that I'm at because I'm comfortable in it. Mm-hmm. Like, I know it. And I can't ever branch out and do that. And so a few things happened at once. So like the medication started really working for me. And of course, like, medication is a personal choice, everyone. And it's quite a journey. And yeah. I have fears of like, when's it going to stop working? You know, but that started really working for me. I was in therapy and I had like a therapist that was really validating. And of course I had access to these things cause I had a job with health insurance. So yeah. Like I was in a privileged moment really, right. You know, like I had a $15 copay for therapy. That's amazing. So I just had support that I hadn't had in a while and people being like, no, you are capable. No, you have worked really hard. And those are things that I always deny from myself. Like, mm-hmm. even if I know how much I've like worked, I'm like, you haven't worked hard enough or good enough. And so I finally felt like the work that I truly didn't think there was a payoff. I thought you just like work, 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 toil, 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 and you still feel like shit and then you die. I didn't realize, no one could have told me it gets better and I would have believed it.
Right.
No, I would not have believed anyone. I'd be like, you don't know that because that's true. But I thought that I was just somebody that it was not going to get better for. And I think that's called depression.
I think so. I think that's it.
I just didn't realize that, like, I think I also didn't realize that that's something you could talk to your doctor about.
Yeah.
Like, I never had thought to tell my, like, primary physician, like, sometimes I just feel like I'll never win anything. Like, it's just not something I thought to tell my doctor, but it's absolutely really relevant to your health to tell your doctor something like that. Mm-hmm. And so I didn't think that would ever change for me. And so all of a sudden I was just feeling like capable, just like excited and capable. Like, oh, maybe I could do that. And so that was how I was feeling, like, physically and emotionally. And then there was this, like, talent that I did have. Mm-hmm. You know, I, like, had to be able to say that out loud. And I think, like, I had to feel capable and like, have the slightest tinge of positivity, even though, ooh, I love being cynical. I had to just have, like, a little bit of that to sell myself in a certain way, mm-hmm. which I think you have to do as an artist, of course, or just absolutely. Like a human being in general.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know? And so I was like, okay, I do this thing. I haven't been calling myself an artist and I don't think I'm that talented, but like something I've been really thinking a lot about, like, especially towards my late 20s after having a full-time job for a while and like working out, you know, in these industries and whatnot, being like, wow, literally no one knows what they're doing. And I just was like, I'm going to channel some of these, like, really mediocre white men I've seen who don't know what they're doing, and they're doing it anyway.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know what? Like, I just, anytime I would doubt myself, I would be like, there's some average person doing it,
mm-hmm.
and they're doing it.
Yep.
And so that's, like, not even shade on them. They're mm-hmm. fucking doing it.
Yep.
So I was like, it might as well be me.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, when you go to a museum with, like, your mom and she sees, like, this piece of modern art and she's like, I could do that. Well, yeah, but are you?
No.
But are you doing it?
That part.
And I think, like, I had to think about that when I would make abstract art, and I would think about someone being like, well, sometimes some Instagram trolls are like, my 8-year-old could do better than that. And I'm like, your 8-year-old sounds fucking awesome.
I saw that comment. Yeah.
Good for your fucking 8-year-old.
Exactly.
And that's the thing. I was like, I'm going to do it. I'm going to be, like, honest when I need to about not knowing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And other times I'm just going to wing it. Mm. And I think that I had the confidence and the, just like the courage. I don't think of myself as a courageous person. I usually think of myself as a very scared person because I've just been always so anxious, but like the courage to be like, yeah, that's $500 or like whatever awesome. The case may be.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
I had a coworker, Amy. Hey, Amy. One day she was just like, you know, you just have to tell someone how much something costs. Like when I'm consulting and someone's like, what's your rate? I'm like, yeah, that's $75 an hour or whatever the case may be. And you just say it. And most of the time people are like, okay. And I was like, all right, I can try that. Cause you know what? If it fails, like whatever.
Yeah.
And so I just started doing that. And I mean, I struggle with it every single day. It's still very hard. But I'm getting better and better at it for sure. And I just was never taught how to be assertive in that way, even though I feel like my family is full of assertive, like, badass women. I feel like I still was undervaluing myself and just thinking I was shit, basically. And not the shit. Just shit.
Just shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
So yeah, I think all those things happened and kind of like culminated to wherever I am now. And I think that, you know, at my last job at the Trevor Project, their volunteer community, y'all, just like the most wonderful group of people. It's the best like community of people that I've ever like encountered, like as a whole. I think often like if I had been around adults like that when I was a kid, like I probably would have been an artist a long time ago because I wouldn't have been a fucked up little mess, you know?
Yeah, right.
But like they're so wonderful and they all are just like really interesting and just very well connected in a lot of ways and also just like liked me and believed in me. And I think we also worked together in ways where like I needed them to believe me and like do what I say in like an emergency or like whatever the case may be. But like, they really just exposed me to a lot of different realms of Los Angeles that I hadn't had access to. And so all this kind of happened at once where I like felt good. Mm-hmm. My mental health journey was good. I had like, you know, fresh out of some relationships, mm-hmm. and was feeling creative, you yeah. know, like one does sometimes. And it just kind of all
aligned.
And, you know, my best friend, Median, she'll be like, she's been telling me forever, like, you know, you need to, I know you don't believe in anything, but like, you need to like really think about what you say and like how you invite things into your life. And I, what I will say is that, especially the last 2 months of like really trying to do this full time, as I've opened myself up to the possibilities, like they're there. Like, I mean, being here today is just so cool. And I feel like I wasn't doing any of those things while I was working full time in the kind of nonprofit work that I was doing. It's just like, you know, very exhausting, very tiring. And so I don't know, here I am. And I don't know exactly how I got here, but like those are the things that I think really contributed to where I'm at. Yeah.
Great.
I love it. Yeah. I'm so in love with your story. And right? again, like I just relate on so many levels, the mental health and growing up. And it's just, yeah, mental health is such an, I'm also bipolar.
Yeah. I mean, I think you're one of the first people that I heard in a workspace be like, yeah, I'm bipolar, which that's badass.
She's badass.
It took me a couple years of not taking medication because I feel you on that. I don't know if I'm bipolar.
Yeah.
Like I hear what you're saying, but like, I need to know, like be in tune with what's going on in my body. And after a couple of years of not taking medication, I was like, oh, okay, mama bipolar. She needs to take medication. But you're right. Like the medication journey is like finding the right one and finding the right dose and being on the right combination. And it is a journey, but I have found success. You have found success. There are a lot of people who have found the successful regimen of medication. Mm-hmm. And you're right. Like life doesn't have to be, I work, and then I die.
Yeah.
You know, it can be a lot more than that. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think, so my internal voice is my mother, Ob. Like, and she's just, I'm like the first voice I ever heard when I developed ears in the womb, just listening to my mom.
Yeah.
And my mom is someone, she all the time is like, life's a bitch and then you die. Like that is my mom's theme. That is her quote, it will be on her tombstone. Life's a bitch and then you die. And so I was just like, well, yeah. And my mom has had a very hard life. And I was just like, yeah, she's right, you know? And so I think I'm not surprised that I thought that way for a very long time. And I mean, I'm still going to think that way from time to time, of course. But yeah. It's cynical.
I feel like it makes you so well-rounded though. And I feel like everything that you have done and you have experienced in your life thus far has brought you to this moment, has prepared for you for this moment. Sure. And is what makes you such a beautiful soul and an amazing individual, and you know, you shine. And I love that.
You are that shiny object.
You shine. Absolutely.
Yeah, gaudy body.
Gaudy body, well, baby.
Gotta have that gaudy body.
Yeah. Oh, I like that I'm taking that.
Yeah, hashtag gaudy body.
Hashtag blessed.
Yeah.
With that gaudy body, baby.
First of all, I have to say that we're going to take pictures after because you both are wearing incredible outfits.
We should take pictures.
And the world has to see it. So we are definitely doing that.
Okay.
But I'm curious because we've had this conversation. I, growing up, had a really hard time sort of, you know, I have multiple identities, right? I'm Latino, I am fat, and I'm a gay man. So I had a hard time mixing those three. To me, I couldn't be a fat gay guy. I couldn't be a gay Latino man. I had to be fat here, gay here, Latino here. And well, the spaces that those need to be.
Yeah.
For you, what did you struggle with that? Was that something that you had to struggle with and come out at the other end? Or was it, were you always sort of, did all your identities sort of mesh?
You know, definitely they did not mesh at all. I mean, I'm a mixed race person. Mm. So my mom's white, my dad is black, and I think that 33 years ago, that was like in the Midwest, that was like a thing. And not that it's not a thing now, and everyone's experiences are different, but people were like, would ask me what I was a lot. Mm. And my mom said that only black women knew I was black. She's like, everyone else would place you like all over the world, but black women always knew that you were black. Mm. And so as a kid, I felt like really racially ambiguous.
Yeah.
And I don't now at all. But as a child, I really felt just like out of place because I was like, here's like my white family. I don't look like any. People think I'm adopted. People ask my mom when she got me. She's like, I had her. And then they're like, there's like stigma. I mean, just the community that she was, this like little Christian community, like just very, you know, drama for all of that. And so I think I just felt weird. I like didn't know what it was. I was just like, I just feel weird. Like, I don't look like any of these people. I'm like fatter than all my classmates. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't think boys or girls are cute right now. Like, I just felt so fucking weird. And I didn't feel like anything meshed. Right. I felt like everything about me was just like strange. And I grew up in a church that was mostly white. And then when I was 18 and I graduated from the church school, I left the church also. And I started going to a black church. Mm. And that changed a lot for me because all of a sudden I wasn't the black girl. There was like lots of black girls. And there were lots of fat people who were like seemed happy about like themselves and their lives. And I really felt like I wasn't the fat black kid in that space. I felt like the pretty girl who sang in the choir in that space. And although I'm not like a religious person now, I think that was a really, really important shift for me to be around people of color and to be around black people and to be around people who just thought I was pretty. Like they were just like, oh, she's pretty. Her voice is pretty. Like, and that was it. And I think that that really validated something for me, that like I had a community that didn't. I mean, they thought I was weird, but not for being black or like mixed, you know, because I just am weird. But, you know, I came out really late. I was really unsure of my sexuality. Like always when I was young, I was just really scared of being gay because I was like, I don't want to go to hell. And so I was just like, please don't be gay. Please don't be gay. Mm-hmm. And then in college when I was like, I felt like I might be kind of gay. I was just like, I didn't drink till I was 21. I didn't smoke weed. I didn't really become a weed smoker until I moved to California. I've always felt like I didn't want to do things until I could do them without feeling guilty. And wow. I like growing up in the church, I felt guilty about fucking everything. And so it took me like years to really like, I mean, currently still shaking that kind of like brainwashing away. Mm. But yeah, once I started, you know, having relationships with women, my queerness just felt like some kind of balm on everything for me. And of course, like, we can't separate, like, our blackness, our queerness, our fat. Like, you know, we're just, like, this person with this intersectionality. Mm-hmm. But once I realized that, like, I'm queering my relationship because that's, like, I'm attracted to this and that's okay, then I just started queering everything. Mm-hmm. Like, no, I deserve like a larger chair that fits my body because this is my body. Like, oh, this is not the normal chair. Well, I'm going to queer the idea of like an appropriate seat or like any kind of like interchange or aspect of my life. Hopefully, like when I become cognizant of the fact that I'm like thinking that I don't fit somewhere, I'm like, oh, we have to queer this because like, I believe that I deserve whatever it is that I need and that I don't inherently not deserve that because I'm fat or because I'm a mixed race black person or because like I have a mental health needs. I think that's like an everyday fight because everything is so inaccessible.
Yeah.
And it is just like a constant like demand to be treated with dignity. But I did find, and like, not that the queer community is like all accepting and perfect, because of course, like, we're all human beings and we're not. And I think like people are always hella fat phobic and like annoying. I feel like my brand of queer, or like our brand of queer that I want for us to have, is just one that is like accommodating and accessible and like understanding of how complicated human beings are, and just like allow us to be complicated and like just be alive and like not be told at this step and that step and this step that like you aren't okay as you are and you need to do this before you can like do this. And so for me, once again, like my queer family in LA, I just feel like really empowered me. Like the youth at the youth center, like my coworkers are like, you know how close you get to coworkers in environments like that. Like, I felt like I fell into this wonderful bubble that's like not perfect, of course, but this wonderful bubble where people genuinely liked me and the things that I was, and I liked them and the things that they were, and we were just in this world fighting to like carve out something that worked for us, and that that was okay, and not only that that's okay, that was rad, like that we were gonna do that because we think we deserve it. And yeah, I don't know how all the things mesh together, but I definitely think like finding and creating queer community here in LA, like queer, especially queer people of color community, like that was everything. It's what I fucking needed my whole life. You know, I didn't feel, I just needed it for a long time.
Amazing. And I want that brand of queer.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do You're doing it right now.
It's all in the room right now.
Tune in next week to join us for part two with Renee Beaver. In the meantime, I hope you guys hit up the website at cheatdaypodcast.com. You can email us at cheatdaypcast@gmail.com. You can find us on the Twitter @cheatdaypodcast, and you can find us on Instagram @cheatdaypodcast.